FMCG Dachvibes.
Der B2B FMCG Expertentalk.
Our co-host Finn Huch is joined by Anouk Snelders, co-founder of Health Food Wall. Frustrated by the lack of healthy, convenient food options, Anouk and her team set out to change the way we eat on the go, to make healthy and sustainable food available everywhere, anytime.
Welcome to today's interview.
Welcome to a new episode from FMCG Dachvibes. This episode is a first English episode, and I'm really happy to talk with Anouk Snelders from Amsterdam today. How are you?
I'm doing good, Finn. How are you?
I'm great. Yeah, we met last year in Amsterdam at the airport at one of your machines. But before we start talking about Health Food Wall, maybe you can start introducing yourself. What is your personal background and why did you start at Health Food Wall?
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity to be here today. Exciting to be talking to you about the exciting changes in the vending market. So when I was 17, I studied in the United States and I thoroughly enjoyed the food culture there. So when I came back to the Netherlands to study, I got into healthy food and exercise and I felt a lot better. So I decided to study nutrition and dietetics to assist others by making healthy food choices. And after that, I started working as a chef in different kitchens. And in that space, I kind of got familiar with the out-of-home food market, which frustrated me a lot because as a dietitian and as a chef, I was busy with food every day. And I knew that people in general wish to purchase and to enjoy healthy food more and make more sustainable food options. However, they are just not as readily available as fast and easy as the fast food is. So that kind of inspired me a while back in 2017 to start a health food wall.
So with Health Food Wall, you invented smart fridges that you place on multiple categories of locations like airports, for example, where we met in Schiphol Airport. If we maybe have a look in the beginning in general about the food ecosystem in the Netherlands regarding amount of brands you have, maybe amount of supermarkets, because in Germany, for example, we have like an oligopolistic structure. Then, of course, over the last years, we had these super fast grocery delivery companies. But of course, there will be also similar maybe to Germany, some really standardized vending machines. Maybe you can describe the food ecosystem when you started. How was it? How was the competition, so to say?
Yeah, the out-of-home food market specifically that I'm focusing on with Health Food Wall is really made up of caterers. The Netherlands is such a catering country. So that means caterers, the bigger one that are also European-wide available, such as Sodexo, ISS Catering, Compass Group, etc. They are found everywhere in the Netherlands, from smaller to medium to larger enterprises, but also in the education system and the cure and care market. And then besides the canteens that are supplied by the caterers, we do have a large vending machine market as well that is mostly made up from traditional vending that everyone recognizes. It's those big, mostly black machines with a pusher that provides the usual brands of sodas and snacks. And of course, we also have food retailers. There are a couple of names that are very large in the Netherlands, such as the Albert Heijn. And they, you see them also around the Netherlands in the more communities, but also more and more in the to-go formula that are also located inside of the education system and in cure and care specifically.
Yeah. And maybe we're talking about supermarkets. Are there also like hypermarkets, more larger supermarkets? Because when I was in Amsterdam the last times, I remember that there's many small supermarkets, some small shops. And also regarding the vending machines, there are like these restaurant chains that every tourist remembers. I think if you are out at night in the city and you are hungry, you just go to some of these restaurants. But yeah, on the bad thing, they only have like unhealthy stuff. So how is it with this ecosystem, for example, in Amsterdam especially?
We are not really a 24/7 country. It is quite frustrating, actually, compared to some other countries that I visited lately, such as Denmark. You saw the 7-Elevens everywhere, and we don't have that, unfortunately. We do have a lot of international oriented supermarkets that provide more the Asian or the Eastern European, the Eastern cuisine. Supermarkets are generally opened really, really short, from 8 to 10, I think. So I think there's a difference there that is perhaps untapped potential. I'm not sure. Perhaps in Amsterdam or Rotterdam or the larger cities, you see that gyms tend to speak to that trend lately of 24/7. But yeah, no. If, for example, a train station such as in Amsterdam, the larger train station in the Netherlands, yeah, you have vending machines on every train perron, but that's it, basically. So an untapped potential there.
I see. I think when it's really similar to Germany, also as you described, the standardized vending machines, it's really outdated. Most of them has only the unhealthy product options. And also the payment, for example, is not even, you know, like less than 50% of all these vending machines, I think, offer cashless payment. Maybe on the other side, with Health Food War, you're working on a lot of these opportunities and potentials, and you developed a really innovative solution, be it for like brands to show their products, but also for the customers to also have these 24/7 options. So if you describe Health Food War in a couple of words, how would you describe it to a customer?
Yeah, interesting thing that you said about the payments. In the Netherlands, we rarely see with cash anymore. Rarely. There's almost everything is PIN these days. So that's an interesting development. With Health Food Wall, we provide a healthy and sustainable food option 24/7 in the out-of-home markets, such as offices, canteens, but also the cure and care markets, so hospitals and the education system. We offer a full service, B2B. So that means for us that we have a partner that is a production kitchen that produces our own label, our private label food. We have a cooled supply chain from the kitchen to the fridges. We have, of course, the fridges that is the hardware that work with RFID technology, so radio frequency technology. And we have built a IT system around that. We finished building that last year. So we pulled the whole API to ourselves. And then we also built a app for the consumers as a payment solution on top of that IT system, which makes it really interactive, data-driven as a full service for the B2B persons, for the B2B customers. But really, of course, we focus with our food on the B2C customers, and we're 100% plant-based, not from a political viewpoint, but more that we see that in the out-of-home food market, there's so much food choices that include a animal protein. And we just wanted to show that a healthy, more sustainable, more plant-based food can be delicious and also on a good price point. And we see really that especially the students from universities and campuses are really adaptive to that. So they are really demanding, actually, in most cases, a more sustainable and healthy food option.
Yeah, plant-based is also growing rapidly in Germany. And over my last visits in Amsterdam, I also noticed that there are, of course, a lot more plant-based products. For example, categories like fermented products, kombucha, alcohol-free drinks. So much, much more options than in Germany. And also there are a lot of more convenience options. So maybe the Netherlands in general is far more advanced, I think, in the convenience sector. And regarding the plant-based options, what was the feedback to 100% plant-based offering? Is there also positive, negative feedback? And what is the feedback from the customers in general?
Yeah, in 2020, we switched to a whole 100% plant-based food option. From 2018, when we just started, it was like 95% plant-based, and we had one vegetarian option that included cheese. Mostly the brownie was the most difficult to innovate because it was such a bestseller, and we had this delicious recipe that included egg. But once we innovated that to a plant-based option that was satisfactory, we just crossed the border to 100% plant-based. We did communicate that quite early on, B2B, because we saw that from an organization's point of view, from the management team to the board of directors, from organizations, they are really, in the Netherlands specifically, pushing towards that sustainability and that health for their employees. Also with the CO2 impact, we have to calculate that more and more. So that's an interesting trend. However, the normal customers, the food customers, they didn't move as fast as the organizations did. So you did see a little pushback from our customers. However, because we focus on taste and quality and a good price, we see that even in some target groups that you might not suspect are open for plant-based, you see that there's still an adaption. We do see, especially like I just mentioned, around the education system, that more and more campuses are going plant-based, sometimes even fully. The vegan canteens are a trend, and I don't believe that it's going to be something that all of the Netherlands is going to include, like 100% vegan school or something. I don't think so. But we are growing towards 80 or 90%. And then for us, especially at those larger locations where we are being put as a partner with the caterers, it is this additional easy mark, so to say, to be 100% plant-based besides the caterers. And it's a nice addition to the caterer. So they say, okay, the canteen of the caterer is maybe 70% plant-based. We're 100. So together, we're like 80%, something like that. So we're used like that as well.
I see. Oh, and regarding the product assortment, I think you have different hardware options, right? For example, on the airport in Amsterdam, you have like a classic smart fridge, which has maybe like 1 or 1.5 square meters of space. And then you have like these health food wall, as your name says, a larger food wall with a larger variety of products. How do you choose the amount of products, the products itself? Do you have like specific category criterias? And do you does the customers also have a possibility to give feedback, for example, via the app, which products they would like to have on their specific locations?
I love your train of thought there with the data. So actually last year we switched to fully intelligent fridges. So we said goodbye to the food wall because the out of stock with locker automat was just really big and the machine was huge. So it didn't fit anywhere else. So in our supply chain to professionalize, we made a choice to go all in onto the intelligent fridges that you saw at the 24/7. Yeah, we had an overview of those. So focusing on the assortment, we offer a range of fresh items that are our own labels, such as sandwiches, meals, pitas, focaccias, etc. And then we add some longer expiration date products from brands for the snacks and the drinks. So it's a nice variety. And then in each and every fridge, we look at the data that the RFID technology provides us to optimize the assortment. So we do it really on fridge level. So even in an hospital in Utrecht, for example, you would suspect probably to have this one hospital being one target group. But in a hospital, you can have a children's hospital space and an emergency room and a poly for the blood lab. And those are different target groups. So each and every fridge has a different fill based on the actual behavior of the customers. And that data indeed comes to our IT backend and we use right now, still by hand, so it's still manual, but we're working on automizing that project as we speak, as a part of a scalability strategy. And then it really, the best sellers, they really differ over the sectors. We see different behavior in students than we see in more blue-collar offices, white-collar offices, and hospitals. Yeah, and so for one, it's a great example that I like to give. There's this ballet academy that we are at, and they're of course they're top athletes, and they have this appetite for banana bread, and their dietitians are like okay with eating banana bread because of the carbs that they can use. So they have this whole shelf full of banana breads that we have nowhere else. So they just, there's just more like a banana bread food hall, actually. And we're fine with that. It's the data. So if they want it, who are we to say like, no, you can't have a whole shelf full of banana breads. So when I say data driven, it's really data driven.
Yeah, it sounds really progressive. And in addition to this question, maybe if you are deciding to offer a new product, is there like a typical test phase? How do you decide if a product is successful or not?
We look at certain data. So of course, we look at how much is being sold and how much is being left over. We have the data of the products that we have been selling for months on months. So we have a benchmark that how a product is successful. And then we also look at the repeat purchase rate. So we look at not only is a customer, a recurring customer, a repeat customer of the total fridge, but also does one particular customer comes back for one particular item? Because if they don't, the data can be very deceiving. Because sometimes a product is being launched and then it's being sold out and you're like, okay, that's great. It's a good product. But if no one comes back for it, then that's a red flag. So we look at how is it selling? Is there a waste or no? And then also, is it a repeat purchase? How big is the repeat purchase rate actually?
I see. Yeah. And in general, regarding new products with, for example, Kitchen Republic in Amsterdam, you have an amazing food spot. I was really, really impressed when I went there the first time. What do you say? What are currently trending categories, trending products in the Netherlands? That maybe are not existing in other countries yet and that you also are interested in offering?
We are absolutely happy with the technology that we use, with the RFID technology, but the RFID technology has some limits in terms of packaging that we can use in our fridges. So unfortunately, not always when we spot a really cool brand for our fridges are able to have them in our fridges because they contain a certain amount of aluminum, for example, metal that is interfering with the RFID technology. So unfortunately for us, we have to be a little bit picky because of the packaging as well. But I do know personally a lot of the startups that are, or sometimes scale-ups even, that are partners of Kitchen Republic. And I think what we see lately that you can also spot in the Food Top 100, a list that comes out in the Netherlands every year that includes really cool food heroes from the agri-food and food retail space, is this interest in making products from food that is otherwise wasted. So you see a lot of circular initiatives from really something that otherwise should have been thrown away, made into a cookie or a sauce or a soup, stuff like that. We also see a trend, and that is more on a social level, that brands are inclusive in immigrants or people that are otherwise maybe struggling to find a job because of whatever reason. So a lot of inclusivity behind a brand, which I really like. We do still see a lot of products that are being plant-based, even though it is not really a hype anymore, plant-based. It's kind of stabilizing. It's even lowering a little in some industries. It is still broadly accepted. So a lot of products are still vegan. Another trend in drinks, and I'm interested to see if you have seen it as well in Germany, is the rise of functional drinks. Vitamin D is added, and magnesium is added, zinc is added, and I myself am a sucker for that. I like to get my vitamin D while I drink a peach flavored drink. Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, I can agree 100%. Last time I was at Vanuga, for example, I tried a vitamin D shot and a collagen shot, for example. So collagen is a massive trend currently in Germany. Also, what you described with a plant-based marketing development in the last years, there had been also a huge trend in Germany for plant-based, but now I think it's just got mainstream and it's growing, but it's not growing that fast than maybe in the last 5 or 10 years. On the other hand, also the market is developing itself further. For example, you can see it on the vegetarian meat options, that instead of soy, they are using more like pea proteins, other protein sources. So also the most critical feedback for plant-based products was from most of the consumers was that, for example, meat has one ingredient, plant-based products sometimes have 20 or something, but think there are really good examples like a planted that only have like 4 or 5 ingredients. So the companies are working on that. And yeah, also what you mentioned with these vitamin drinks, it's also a massive trend here in Germany. Of course, there's Vitamin Well, which comes from Sweden, I think, the mother company, which is massive here. And all these BCAA drinks, EAA drinks for gyms. Yeah, but talking about the habits of the consumers with tracking, could you say that over the last years that there's also in Germany, we call it snackification, that people tend to eat more often and less smaller portions? Can you also see that or see it in your personal surroundings with friends, family, that this trend is getting more and more common?
Interesting. If I look at the data of the fridges in terms of which moments people are buying what, we do still see a peak in lunch. However, there's also a peak at 10 and at 4. So that's kind of the traditional snack moments in between the bigger meals. I think the trends of adding protein to everything, basically, shows that people are looking for better, more nutrient-dense foods as a snack. So I would say, indeed, in those protein drinks, protein bars, there's a huge rise in that in the Netherlands, kind of shows for that, indeed, people are looking for more nutritious snacks in between. So I think that trend speaks for that. Our data doesn't really show that yet. Also, the products that are being sold at each time, it's kind of still traditional. So the more snacks at 10 and at 4 and more the lunch items at around 12 and 1, it doesn't really support that. But we do, post-COVID, see that the traditional vending is, it's still here, unfortunately, for how long we'll see. But organizations are becoming more and more aware of the importance of healthy nutrition for their employees, students, patients. So I do think that that traditional canteen moments that everyone gets together to eat food, with that rise of more fresh vending, more to-go propositions in food retail, is going to change that eventually, where people can just choose a wrap whenever they can instead of they have to wait for the canteen to be open. It goes chicken or egg, right?
No. And for example, in Germany, there's also a thing with the canteens that from the psychological perspective, the people in Germany, they're really price sensitive. I think that is common around the whole world. that the Germans like the discount products. But for example, I just went to a Grüne Woche and there was some guy talking about that the price level, for example, is like €5 for additional canteen. And now even with inflation or sometimes increased production cost, people are not willing to buy more. And then additionally, not sure how is it in the Netherlands, comes to a lack of stuff. So there's not enough stuff for a canteen sometimes. So, and yeah, and in general in Germany, around 90% of the companies have less than 10 employees, so it's not always possible to have an own canteen. So I think when a solution like yours is perfect to fit into smaller offices and a lot of other different location types. Maybe talking about logistics, because on the B2B sector, this last mile logistic is a huge topic because everyone is working on it and trying to find the perfect solution. How are you doing it? Do you have like standardized refill times, 1 or 2 times per week? Do you say if 50% of our products are sold out, we are refilling the fridge? How do you handle this topic?
It is definitely a challenge in this business model. It is definitely economics of scale. It is an economy of scale concept. So it gets better and better each year with us. For us, it was most important that we found a partner because at first we did it ourselves to really get the hang of it. But then after a while, we saw that it was not scalable like that. We chose not to like that in the end. But for us, the partner is not just throwing boxes, right? It's not like a food retailer that just delivers a box or a bag with food. It has to not only be transported safely and cooled, but it has to be placed in a fridge a certain way, following a certain plan, and handling a food waste or product not being sold in a good manner. And also, it's a first personal contact that the consumer has with our brand, because otherwise it's just static, it's just a fridge. So having a partner that not only just brings the food there, but also does all the other stuff, that was the main challenge. So we found a great partner to do that for us. But we do stock twice a week, and it is a continuous management of that operation per filling moment, even though it goes well in general, the food is being transported well, it is still being able to have that final quality check of it being filled exactly the way we want. That is, in our case, at least the biggest challenge. So it's not just the food transportation. It's not just that last mile. It's just being that brand representative, so to say. Do you know anything about that last mile transportation in the fresh vending industry that you would like to add in terms of experience?
Yeah, it's crazy because I was also active in the last years in the vending machine industry. And then there's this wording called telemetry. That means that you as an operator know exactly at how many products are currently in this specific vending machine. And in Germany, the technology sometimes on these classical vending machines is so completely outdated that they don't even know which products are in there. So it could really happen that we are driving to, for example, a train station. The guy gets out of a car, goes to the vending machine, makes a list which products are missing, goes back to the car, and then goes back again and refills the machine so that it can take like 1 hour or something. It's absolutely unbelievable how inefficient it is sometimes. And especially like these fast grocery delivery companies, for example, they are really, really picky on this information because it's really important for their business model. What you also mentioned is the placement of the product. So in Germany, the retailers are currently pushing on the B2C side with loyalty, like new apps, for example, where huge loyalty programs like Payback, Deutschlandcard, but also each retailer has an own app. And if I remember, you also have an own app. And how important is the app for you as a medium to communicate with your customers? And how important is it on a B2B2C side for your brands or the brands you're offering their products in your fridge, but to offer like additional advertising services for them?
Yeah, the additional advertising services is something that we're currently developing, we're exploring in terms of media in the broader sense, to use our fridge in a more holistic way of communicating the brands that we have in our fridges through the ad, through the screen, through every source that we have, actually. It's more on a consumer level, indeed, that we wish to offer that service. And that's mainly because our technology, with the RFID technology that we have in place, it is not as a usual vending machine where people choose their product before they pay. Normally, vending machine, you press A1 and there's this one item, you pay, and then it rolls down. And in the most technological cases, there's this little lift that goes get it. For us, the door opens. So for the listeners, you tap your card first. There's this temporarily reservation made on your card. Then you open the door and you can grab the products that are just existing on the shelves, like in the supermarket. And if you wish to purchase a product, you just hold it in your hands and you close the door again. So it's a little different like that. So not every customer, especially in the more closed locations, such as offices where we have a high repeat customer rate, so a customer comes often, it's not really a soft service. It's quite annoying to have that temporary reservation. So with our app, we don't have that. So for us, it's more data. For the brands, it's going to be very interesting in terms of advertisement. But for the customers, just no temporary deposit. Also, some fun features such as a live menu insight, a loyalty program indeed, refer a friend, and we're going to build on that more and more, of course. Yeah.
Is it also planned, for example, to offer like meal options, let's say grab a drink and a snack and you save 2 euros, or you have like a standardized price?
We do have a standardized price. It is something that we are exploring with a food safe company at the moment that is global, to even lower the food waste more, to maybe connect different apps also in terms of personal nutrition apps with our fridge. So we see, for example, potential to link your personal data and your health goals to our app to see and get a recommendation which meal to choose, for example. But right now we are also pushing products that are being liked or loved by our customers that have maybe reached an expiration date or close to, that we can actually offer additional discounts to, stuff like that. So we are just in the exploration phase of how much we can add as interesting features to our customers.
Yeah, I think if we are talking about this topic, there are endless opportunities. And also what we can see in Germany that each retailer is currently trying to get the most out of it. But sometimes it seems that they're also just testing, for example, giving like discount on a whole category, like 20% on all drinks, independent which drink brand you choose. What would be also interesting is regarding the price flexibility in general. I think it's a rule that the smaller the point of sale, the higher is the price a bit. For example, in Germany, Red Bull is like €1.39 in the supermarkets, and on a corner store, on a so-called Späti, it's more like €2.50, and on a vending machine, it's also €2.53. How's the price level compared to a supermarket from your products, and are the customers willing to pay, how much are they willing to pay more?
Yeah, we do try to match the supermarket price points for at least the same categories. So their to-go assortment of wraps, sandwiches, stuff like that, we cannot compare ourselves to a croissant because that's like 30 cents. But indeed, in the categories, we are on that exact same level, mostly because those are our competitors. So if we are in hospital, there is a food retailer and there's a caterer and they have those prices, so we have to match. We do see still, unfortunately, that the perspective of the consumer on vending is that it is a lower price, it's less quality. So they expect to pay less in our fridges than in the canteens, even though it's handmade and it's actually from the same production kitchens in some cases, or the same brand. So we do still have to fight that perception of the consumer that vending is not fresh or vending is not qualitative. But that's changing a little bit by a little bit. We do have one. We won a voucher at the Wageningen University of 25K. So that's great.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And we're going to spend that on that interesting data of mostly external data that we can add to provide flexibility in price points, so that the dynamic price point that is being used by supermarkets, we're going to add that to our fridges, which is quite innovative. It hasn't been done that much. So we see a huge potential, for example, to see if there is an adaption for the consumer to pay 3 cents more for a drink when it's hot. We're just in that exploration phase. We get the help of the Wageningen University research team to do that. So that's going to be a project that we're working on in 2025.
Talking about 2025, we are just in the beginning of a year. And in the food sector there, like in whole Europe and in Germany, but also in the Netherlands, a lot of important food trade fairs, events. So which events, for example, do you like to attend, and which one can you recommend? If someone is new and wants to visit the Netherlands, at which date maybe he should come visit?
Goodness. It may be a little bit controversial. I have done the fairs and the events for years. And I would personally recommend, just if you're going to the Netherlands to explore food, take a bike, rent a bike at the station and drive around Amsterdam. I think you're going to find so much more delicious and innovative food options there than at the fairs. I see a huge trend in fairs that in the Netherlands, most people use those fairs to just catch up and have a drink and have a fried snack. And it's more like a social event, I think, than really showcasing innovation. So if you wish for innovation, talk to the entrepreneurs. Go visit Kitchen Republic, for example. And we have a multiple of those concepts in the Netherlands, also a new one in Rotterdam. Plan a meeting with those entrepreneurs and catch up with them. I think you'll get more value from them than the fairs at this point. That's my maybe unconventional opinion on that.
Now, as a person who visits a lot of events, I can agree to many of these points. So at the end, you can see a product maybe from a startup sometimes for years at a trade fair, and you say, oh, it's a nice product. But at the end, what counts is that you can find it in the main retailers and main point of sales. And that is also showcasing how far the consumer are at some point. Because, for example, in the Netherlands, you have like a, even if Germany is a beer country, you had like a huge rolls of a bit more pricey compared to Germany beers with like a lot of IPAs, really fruity ones, really tasty beers. And in Germany, it's all about, yeah, you pay for 20 bottles of so-called beer kasten, you pay a maximum of 10 euros. So, yeah, I think that's also a bit a cultural difference that maybe the people in the Netherlands are also a bit more open to spend more money on food. I'm not sure if there's like a number, but for example, in Germany, it's around like 10%, maybe a bit more. And yeah, that could be also something.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's one of my personal hobbies to just go into a supermarket and just browse and see, oh, they've added this new product. Why? What is it? Look at the ingredients, taste it, of course. I don't know about the price point of the Netherlands. It's not like we have this rich eating culture compared to Austria or Switzerland or our Belgium neighbors. You see that there's so much more willingness to spend money on lunch or on good food, local food. It's still very much more traditional than it is here. Here it's more like, do you have a cheese sandwich? We're not that exotic and not willing to spend that much on lunch in particular. But it is a trend in the younger generation, again, to visit stores outside, have expensive coffee. So maybe with a new generation that's going to change. I hope so. We can use some a new fresh wind in the eating culture in the Netherlands, for sure.
Yeah, I think that is a really good perspective for the future. If someone wants to talk to you, what is the best way to contact you? And if someone wants to maybe see some of your machines, at which places they can visit the Netherlands to see your machines live?
Yeah, if you're in the Netherlands, you're traveling through Schiphol Airport, you can find us at the Schiphol Plaza next to the entry, so it's hard to miss. And if you would like to talk to me, you can email me via info@healthfoodwall.com, or you can just visit our website and take a look. I would love to catch up with each and every one, of course, and hear what you have to say about this podcast and just vending in general. Super open for ideas. I would like to thank you also, Finn, for the opportunity to have a chat here.
Yeah, thank you very much, Anouk. It was a really insightful discussion, and I think there's a lot of value for our listeners. So I only can recommend to each German person listening, just visit Amsterdam, visit the Netherlands. It's a really open country, really nice country, and compared to Germany, a lot of innovative food products that you can taste there. Thank you very much.
Du möchtest mehr über unseren Gast erfahren? Dann schreib uns einfach eine Mail an podcast@dachvibes.com oder folge uns bei LinkedIn und im Netz unter dachvibes.com. Dachvibes.